Hello, I'm ISS's Global Head of Research, Georgina Marshall, and welcome to the latest instalment of our Bulletin podcast series. This May 2021 edition will provide updates on the progress so far of some of the main European proxy seasons, looking at some interesting trends and projecting forward to look at a number of remaining AGM hotspots. Joining me today to talk about the busy calendar for the rest of May and June are, in order of podcast appearance, Karolina Malasuskaite, a member of our Nordic research team in Stockholm, Diane Moulongue, a member of our French research team coming to us from Paris, and Gianluca Antipasqua in Brussels, head of Italian research and part of our Southern European team. So first up is Karolina. Welcome, Karolina. Let's start out with the big picture first. When we released the April European season preview podcast in early last month, most of the European markets were just getting ready to enter their respective season peaks. Can you update us briefly on where things stand today and what's still ahead in terms of peak proxy seasons across Europe?
Yeah, so thank you, Georgina. While the status across markets slightly differs, looking at the meeting dates, it is clear that the season across Europe has been steadily building up from mid-March and reached its peak in April, with roughly one third of the season's European meetings in the second half of the month. However, one fifth of the season meetings are still to be held during May. Looking across different markets, Nordics, France, and Germany are approaching the end of their respective season second peaks. And whereas Eastern Europe is getting ready for its busiest period ahead, with the majority of Eastern European meetings scheduled from mid-May to end of June. Southern European and Benelux markets have the peaks already behind them, but Spain's second high seasonal wave is in mid-May. And the UK has now reached its busiest point of the year, with around 120 FTSE all-share AGMs over the three-week period from the 10th through the 28th of May. And that's around 30% of the entire year's UK voting workload concentrated into a span of 3 weeks. So no small endeavour for our investors.
Yes, you're right there, Karolina. So let me turn to you next, Diane. Since part of the main seasons are behind us already, what would you say are the most notable trends in Europe so far?
Well, executive compensation is certainly one of the key topics of this proxy season, especially considering the implementation of the SRD2 and the impact the pandemic has had on the pay patterns. In this regard, despite the SRD2 efforts to harmonize remuneration practices and disclosure, they still remain quite divergent across Europe. We observe a general improvement in retrospective disclosure of information since the first round of SRD2 votes in 2020, particularly in the Netherlands, and rather better disclosure in Sweden, where many remuneration reports have been submitted for the first time this year. However, ex-post disclosure of pay targets still remains uncommon in many markets. Another noteworthy trend is that in many European countries, the percentage of companies including ESG-related performance criteria in incentive schemes, but also the weight of these criteria, have increased. It's mostly due to SRD2 requirements and the pandemic that makes ESG factors more relevant and the definition of financial targets more challenging than it used to be. We also have observed increasing level of voting decency on remuneration in some markets. For example, in France, this season is shaping up, to be very contested. An article published in AGFI indicates that in general meetings that have already taken place, the remuneration report of CAC 40 company have so far received average support of only 79%, which is much lower than last year's average of 88% support. This higher level of dissent so far this year is likely driven by the fact that some French companies have effectively erased the negative effect of the COVID crisis on the achievements of annual bonus and long-term incentive plan criteria by lowering the threshold for target achievement.
Very interesting indeed. Thank you, Diane. Gianluca, let me turn to you next. Diane touched on the likely impact of the pandemic in triggering higher levels of remuneration voting dissent. So let's develop that topic further. Prior to the season, there were many debates globally around how companies have managed their pay decisions for executive management, with particular focus on potential changes to in-flight incentive schemes for both annual and long-term incentives. What insights can you highlight with regards to changes we've seen to in-flight pay schemes and how they may be impacting those votes on remuneration reports and policies?
Yes, to start with the big picture, the approach with respect to the pandemic varied significantly, even within the same country and similar industries. Some companies seemed to consider the pandemic nothing more than a footnote, whereas others showed greater sensitivity, for example, with executive waiving part of their remuneration. In the Nordics and some other European markets, for example, we frequently observed rather symbolic-based salary reduction by around 10% for a period of 3 to 6 months, with no significant cuts to bonus paid. However, to illustrate the variety seen, Spain, for instance, stands out as one market where many companies adjusted pay downwards with a combination of pay cuts and waiving bonuses. For both short-term and long-term incentives, adjustment to in-flight performance targets were the most common adjustment made. Such changes, especially when for the annual bonus, were sometimes accompanied by a corresponding reduction in the award opportunity, but this was not always the case. Overall, there has not been a consistent Europe-wide trend on how companies have addressed COVID-19 impacts on their business results when determining pay packages. We have seen a wide spectrum of board decisions, many of which have been concerning from a governance perspective.
Mm. And are there any specific examples, either of those or of other interesting remuneration issues that have come up that you can highlight today?
A notable example with regards to changes to in-flight pay arrangements was a Swedish main index company, Volvo, whose results were hardly hit by the pandemic. The company carried out layoffs and received government support, but also introduced updated incentive scheme metrics and targets mid-year, which resulted in a bonus of $1.1 million to the CEO, corresponding to approximately 74% of the maximum possible outcome under short-term incentive. Based on the voting results disclosed by Volvo, the remuneration report was approved. However, due to common Swedish market practice, the actual vote results have not been disclosed. Another interesting example is Dutch paint maker AkzoNobel. At the AGM, the remuneration report was defeated after concerns were raised with respect to downwards adjustments made to the return on investment performance targets that were set back in 2018. The company's return on investment target was not achieved, whereas the long-term incentive paid out in full. Concerns were also raised with an exceptional share grant to the CEO, without further details having been disclosed to shareholders. Also, at Italian banks, some say-on-pay votes saw particularly high dissent, including at the Italian biggest lenders, Intesa San Paolo and UniCredit. Notably, COVID-related amendments to Intesa's performance option plan received 30% dissent. With respect to UniCredit, the company's new remuneration policy was supported by only 54% of the votes and share capital present at the AGM, due most likely to the problematic pay package granted to the company's new CEO, Andrea Orcel. In the UK, a notable late April AGM result on pay was at Foxtons Group, the real estate agent. The company paid substantial bonuses after a torrid year of poor share price performance and weak financial results, and having received significant support from the UK government in wage subsidies and tax relief. Foxton also tapped investors for additional cash in 2020. At the AGM in late April, around 40% of the vote went against the company's remuneration report and 33% opposed the re-election of the remuneration committee chair. there have also been several contentious votes driven by companies being unwilling to cancel or reduce outstanding incentives, even when there would appear to be an obvious case to do so. Kingspan, Indivior, and Rio Tinto have all faced high levels of dissent votes on pay along these lines, with Rio Tinto's remuneration report suffering the worst result so far. The resolution was failing to a crushing defeat with 60% of vote cast against a backdrop of the destruction of Juokan Gorge caves and the departure of the CEO.
Indeed, and clearly a lot of activity on the remuneration front. Thanks for that. Let's now turn to the rise of say on climate proposals, particularly in France and the UK, where they've been seen both as shareholder proposals, but also probably a preponderance as management initiatives. Diane, what are the latest developments in this area since we brought it to our listeners' attention in April?
So as highlighted in our previous podcast, some companies submit to shareholder votes their environmental strategy under a non-binding resolution, which is the so-called Say on Climate item. And this is one of the key topics to watch in France this season, as well as in other markets. Say on Climate resolutions remain relatively small in number, but high profile. To date, three French companies have put their Say on Climate resolution on their agenda this year. These companies are Vinci, Atos, and Total. For the moment, vote results are only in for the Say on Climate vote at Vinci, which was favorably received by shareholders as it was approved at around 98%. The general meetings of Atos was just held yesterday, the 12th of May, and Total will be held on the 28th of May. With regards to Atos, we are not expecting to see particular dissent on the decarbonization plan presented by the company, as the main business of Atos is to provide digital services, which is, environmentally speaking, a less controversial industry than Total. Total, the oil and gas group, is currently targeted by an NGO named Reclaim Finance that has launched a Vote No campaign calling for shareholders to vote against Total's climate strategy. The NGO claims that Total's 2030 greenhouse gases reduction target are not aligned with international ambition to fight against climate change. Therefore, Total will be a contentious but interesting meeting to follow. Also in the UK, we have thus far seen three Say on Climate votes presented by management at Glencore, Aviva, and Unilever, and all three have been overwhelmingly supported by shareholders. Glencore received the lowest level of support at 94% of the vote, compared to over 99% at Aviva and Unilever. Proposals at Shell and HSBC are in the pipeline, with those AGMs upcoming on May 18th and May 28th. BP and Shell also face a shareholder's proposal on climate, which called for the energy companies to set and disclose targets that are consistent with the Paris Agreement. But both companies have said that they see the shareholder resolution as redundant and overly prescriptive, and they also claim that their existing commitment and target already answered the demand of the shareholder's resolution. BP AGM was held on the 12th of May, so we will likely find out the outcome of Atos and BP meetings shortly.
Thanks, Diane. And speaking of shareholder resolutions, the Nordic markets are known for numerous shareholder resolutions from retail investors. So let me come back to you, Carolina. What are some of the trends in the Nordics with regards to shareholder proposals, and particularly on climate-related topics?
Indeed. So firstly, to provide some context, the Nordic markets are known for allowing shareholders with as little as one share to be able to submit a shareholder proposal, which must be then put up for vote at company's general meeting. And it is also worth noting that shareholder proposals in the Nordics are typically binding resolutions, unless they are explicitly phrased as recommendations to the board, which is usually not the case. And the proposals submitted by retail shareholders tend to be rather directives and often leave little flexibility to companies. So given these low submission thresholds, there are several active retail shareholders that tend to send multiple similar proposals from year to year at such companies as Hennes & Mauritz, Schopenhams Lufthavne, and Equinor. With regards to climate-related topics, one notable case is Norwegian company Equinor ASA, which is operating in the oil and gas industry. For the third consecutive year, the Dutch campaign group followed this, submitted a resolution at Equinor's AGM held on 11th of May, requesting the board to set and publish targets aligned with the goal of the Paris Agreement, covering all short, medium, and long-term greenhouse gas emissions of the company's operations, and also the use of its energy products, including scope 1, 2, and 3 targets. It further asked the company to report at least annually on the strategy, underlying policies, and progress made. The resolution provides a broad mandate to the board to choose the most appropriate metrics and targets in order to reach the Paris Agreement goals. And similarly worded proposals submitted in previous years received 1.6% and 3.2% shareholder support in 2019 and 2020, respectively. And based on information we received, shareholders voted against the resolution tabled by Follow this year. However, the further details are not yet disclosed. And that said, it is worth noting that Equinor appears to be responsive to the increased pressure from shareholder groups towards the company's alignment with Paris Agreement goals. In 2020, the company pledged to become a net zero company by 2050 and will announce short and medium term plans to achieve its ambition in June 2021. Furthermore, right before the release of this year's annual meeting notice, Equinor announced that it will submit its energy transition plan for advisory shareholder vote every third year, starting with AGM 2022. It is noted that the company's European peer, Royal Dutch Shell, is submitting a similar plan for an advisory shareholder vote at its upcoming AGM already this year.
So, as we've heard, there's a lot going on this season already. In this upcoming last segment of our podcast, let me ask each of you to highlight for our listeners the most noteworthy European meetings that you see coming up in the next few weeks. First, let me turn back to you, Diane. What do you see in France?
Well, many French companies hold their general meetings at the end of May or beginning of June, which causes a concentration of analysis and engagement with companies at the beginning of May. In addition to the Say on Climate resolution we've just discussed, other interesting meetings to follow include Atos again and the Lagardère. For Atos, the auditors have qualified their opinion on the consolidated financial statements. They have highlighted concern regarding two US entities, which are Atos IT Solutions and Services and Atos IT Outsourcing Services. The concerns are relating to internal control weaknesses over the financial reporting process and revenue recognition that have led to several accounting errors. The entities whose accounts are questioned represent about 11% of the consolidated revenue and 9% of consolidated operating margin of the company. So on its side, the Atos has indicated that it will conduct a full accounting review of the two US entities and that a strong remediation and prevention plan has been designed under the leadership of the group general secretary and is being implemented. So we will see what the shareholders' reaction will be on this topic. Another meeting I would highlight is that of Lagardère. Since beginning 2020, Lagardère Group has been challenged by Humber Capital, an investment fund that is also the company's largest shareholders. Because Humber Capital wants to simplify the legal structure of Lagardère. Lagardère is currently structured as a limited partnership. In French, it's called commandite par action. And this structure, according to Humber Capital, prevents management's alignment and accountability to shareholders. And also, under this structure, Arnaud Lagardère, through his position as general partner, accumulates all powers. 2 weeks ago, On the 28th of April, the Lagardère Group announced its decision to end its limited partnership structure and transform the group into a limited company. In French, it's called Société Anonyme. This proposal will be submitted to the general meeting on the 30th of June. And as the transformation project is notably subject to shareholders' approval, the general meeting shall be really interesting to follow.
Thank you, Diane. And indeed. And Gianluca, to turn back to you next, although some of the highest season peaks are behind us in some of the European markets, including Italy, I know there are still some interesting meetings ahead there as well. What are the key high profile meetings ahead for Italy on your radar?
The bulk of the Italian proxy season is now behind us, as most AGMs took place in late April. However, some interesting shareholder meetings are yet to come. Among those is Atlantia, which holds its annual meeting on the 31st of May, where a shareholder will have the opportunity to express their non-binding opinion on the offer received from a consortium led by Italy's state lender Cassa Depositi e Prestiti for Atlantia's 88% stake in Autostrade per l'Italia, one of Europe's leading concessionaires for the construction and management of toll motorways. Shareholders of Italian listed companies generally do not vote on similar transactions. However, in this case, the exceptional nature of the matter, the importance of the asset that will be subject to disposal, and the wish expressed by some shareholders in this regard have led the board to call the general meeting in question. Other interesting meetings include the two general meetings of Mediaset in May and June, which take place after the Italian media company controlled by the Berlusconi family reached an agreement with Vivendi to end a long-lasting legal battle started 5 years ago. According to the agreement, Vivendi will divest most of its 29% stake in Mediaset over the next 5 years. In addition, at its June AGM, Vivendi will support the proposed transfer of Mediaset's headquarters to the Netherlands and the distribution of an extraordinary dividend of 30 cents per share. Lastly, it is worth underscoring the AGM of Leonardo S.p.A., given the proposal of activist investor Bluebell Partners to approve liability actions against the company CEO Alessandro Profumo. Profumo was condemned to 6 years imprisonment and 2.5 million euros of fine for stock manipulation and false corporate communication in October 2020. The conviction pertains to his actions as chairman of Banca Monte dei Paschi di Siena. As the decision can be overturned by the second or third instance courts, Profumo has not been removed from his role as Leonardo CEO. The AGM is scheduled for the end of for the 19th of May.
Thanks, Gianluca. And I started the podcast with you, Carolina, so let me direct my final question back to you. Earlier, you mentioned that the peak of Eastern European season is fast approaching, while the UK is also in the midst of its busiest period. Are there any particular meetings to watch or highlight in the UK or in Eastern Europe?
Yes, so to start with UK, among the meetings to watch are AstraZeneca, which has proposed a significant increase in long-term incentives for CEO Pascal Soriot, and National Express, the operator of public transit systems, which has increased its CFO's fixed and variable pay following an extremely difficult year due to the pandemic. And the AstraZeneca AGM was held on Tuesday, the 11th of May, while National Express convened its AGM yesterday, the 12th of May. Based on the latest information that we have for now, the dissent level to the proposed changes in the remuneration policy at AstraZeneca is close to 40%. Finally, Pentagon, the auto retailer, faced a large vote against its pay proposals in 2020, and the 2021 AGM also figures to be contentious, as the company has paid bonuses in a year in which it took over £42 million in government support and laid off 30% of its staff. And turning to Eastern Europe, it is worth mentioning the meeting of CD Projekt, which is a Polish computer games producer whose AGM will take place on May 25th, 2021. So in 2020, both the company CEO and deputy CEO got the right to buy shares for 4.4 million euros, whose market value as of the vesting date was approximately 72.3 million euros. And this comes in addition to the bonus for 2020 equal to 5.3 million euros that they will receive this year. In Poland, no CEO of a listed company has yet received such variable remuneration. So the case is rather controversial and subject of considerable debate given the record outcomes midst of challenging times that company is going through. So after many months of anticipation and three postponements of the release date on December 10th, 2020, the company has launched its long-awaited Cyberpunk 2077 game. And the game's release turned out to be a great disappointment due to a high number of bugs. As a result, Sony removed the game from its PlayStation Store, and in addition, Sony, Microsoft, and CD Projekt have been forced to offer players a refund for the game. After a troublesome launch, the board had to also address employees' complaints about tight deadlines and high overtime work imposed by a management team determined to deliver the game on schedule. Moreover, CD Projekt will now face class action lawsuits from a number of American investors who claim that they suffered damages as the company's statements about its business operations and prospects were materially false and misleading. These events have affected the company's share price, which from December 3rd, 2020, 1 week before the game's launch, until May 4th this year has dropped by 60%. So, despite big controversy surrounding the game, the heavy stock losses recorded by investors, class action lawsuits, as well as employee complaints about working conditions, in 2021, five management board members will receive bonuses that will total approximately 23.3 million euros. And on balance, management explains that the group closed fiscal 2020 with record revenues and record net earnings. So it will be interesting to see if this justification will be sufficient for the company's shareholders who, during the upcoming AGM, will have to vote on director's discharge and on the remuneration report.
And thank you very much, Carolina. And that's it for our May European Update podcast. Thanks to Carolina, Gianluca, and Diane. And many thanks to you, our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast and found it useful. Please watch your emails over the course of the coming weeks for information on and links to other episodes of this season's Bulletin podcast series. Our next scheduled podcast will be a preview of Japan season. So today, from all of us at ISS, thanks again for listening in and goodbye for now.